Warm welcome to you all. I'm John Bigelow, Liz Bigelow's husband, and I'll be conducting the funeral today. Can you hear it at the back? Thank you all for coming. Your presence here marks Liz's death in a way that will help us, her family, through this time of grief. And if you would sign the memorial record we're assembling, I'd be grateful. I want to remember that you were here, and I don't trust my brain especially today. The book is on the table, a round table over in the corner there, if you would sign after. Our thoughts go out also to friends and relations who cannot be here today, and particularly to Liz's brother, Ross, and to my brothers and my sister-in-law, Frana, in New Zealand, and to Jeannie and Michael Shaw in Vancouver and Steffi Lewis in Princeton. A few days ago, my son Ben recalled something Liz had said at her mother's funeral a few years ago. Liz had quoted from a sentimental song by Bette Midler, one that many of you may know, "The Wind Beneath My Wings," and Ben said that the words equally expressed the way he felt about his mother. This struck me with an edge of irony in many respects, since he came back to live with us over these three difficult years of Liz's illness. Ben has been an invisible support for Liz and me without ever attracting attention to his contributions, so he's been a bit of a supportive wind himself. I was touched by what Ben said, and I reflected that I too and many of Liz's friends feel in one way or another that Liz has been a powerful uplifting force in our lives. Nevertheless, I have to disagree with Ben on one detail. Everyone can see the eagle, but they can't see the wind that supports it in its flight. Liz, in contrast, was not invisible. She was, I feel, more like a mighty wave beneath our keels. It will be hard for many of us who have known her to face her absence in the days ahead, and it may help if I start by telling one brief version of the story of her life. Then Liz's sister Joan and her son Stephen and Ben will speak on behalf of family. There will be a break for reflection while the St. Pius X bell ringers play some handbells. Then Ellen Barra and Pat Brown will speak on behalf of Liz's friends and colleagues. How are we going? Liz was always Elizabeth in New Zealand, Canada, and England, and only became Liz when she moved to Australia. Even before we got here, we anticipated that it would be more of an informal ethos. Elizabeth grew up in Otago and then in Christchurch, the youngest of four. Murray, Joan, Ross, and Elizabeth, children of Doris and Alan Cardner. In Christchurch, Elizabeth trained and worked as a nurse, and she married me in 1968. When I went to Vancouver to study, she came with me and worked there as a nurse. When I went to study at Cambridge, she came too, stopped work, and gave birth to our first son, and threw herself enthusiastically into motherhood. When I got a job in Wellington, New Zealand, Liz returned to New Zealand and to nursing, and she gave birth to our second son, Ben. Liz loved being a mother, but she also fiercely believed that we should all stop at two to save this beautiful planet from the catastrophes of overpopulation. When we moved to Australia, Liz began to launch herself into a career in psychology, working especially with Beryl McKenzie at La Trobe. Her career in psychology was interrupted by a spell in the public service, where she made lasting friendships, especially with Judy Simkin, a raconteur like Liz, whose gold strappy shoes are mentioned in the program for today's funeral. Ask me or Ben for the story behind those shoes. Then Liz returned to psychology, where she had found her true vocation. From Felicity Dunn, Liz took over a splendid program for sex offenders at Pentridge Prison. And family and friends will recall astounding stories she would bring home from her work in the prison. From there, Liz moved to work especially with Ellen Barra and others at Monash, and with Pat Brown and others at the Children's Court Clinic, and with some amazing private clients, and to work on a doctoral thesis. It was a very busy and varied work schedule. The variety, difficulty, and importance of this work matched Liz's talents and her interests magnificently. For some people, death is made harder to face because they feel they haven't done it yet. Liz wanted much more of the same, but she did not feel that she hadn't done it yet. In her work, she'd found what she wanted to do, and she wanted to do a lot more of it. She also wanted to do more of the things she loved doing with family and friends, in the Over the Hill Walking Club she had joined, in the bell ringing circle at St. Pius X in Heidelberg, in making shawls and tapestries for nieces and nephews and their children, going to concerts, plays and operas, initiating outings on weekends, traveling overseas, and the list goes on and on. There are some photograph albums out that cover some of those. Tragically, Liz found in the year 2000 that she had cancer. She faced this bravely and also with an intellectual resourcefulness and imaginativeness that deeply impressed the doctors who worked with her in fighting the disease. The very unusual course of her treatment took her through 7 major surgical interventions in 3 years. And yet, as our latest photo album shows, this did not stop Liz pursuing numerous of her characteristically daring deeds over that time. Her medical case study will, I believe, leave lasting benefits for the future patients of those doctors who treated her. Not everyone will choose to take the bold surgical route that Liz took, but she's expanded the space of possibilities. In the midst of a round of chemotherapy, Liz insisted on taking a flight over Antarctica, an adventure that she had booked about a year ago. She had been annoyed with herself for missing the total eclipse that had been visible recently from Ceduna in South Australia. So she checked it out and found that this Antarctic flight offered her what would almost certainly be her last chance of seeing a total eclipse in her lifetime. Liz had a perfect view of this eclipse. Got a photo that I took myself over her shoulder. And she loved it. Her strength failed rapidly after this marathon 14-hour airline flight, and in the end she died peacefully. In her last thoughts, she was aware that there was some chance that she would rally, but only a small chance. Yet what she needed to do was to rest while the medical staff tried to restore the balance of her electrolytes. So Liz felt she could rest and let go without feeling that this was giving up, but rather that this was her playing her part in a team effort. This was an ending that came a few decades sooner than she and we had hoped, but apart from that, it was not a bad way for her to go. I'll now call on Joan, her sister, and then Stephen and Ben to speak briefly on behalf of family, and then we'll have a short break, and then we'll have 2 people speaking on behalf of friends and colleagues. So, Joan, good luck.